ॐ गणितमिनन्दस्य विनोदनशलकय चक्षुसिमिलितानि येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनभीष्टं स्थपितं येन भूतले सायमुपकदामयं ददति सा पुनन्तिकाम्. Vanshikaupatrubhascha, Kripasindhu Vayevacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Reading the 16th chapter of the 9th canto of the Bhagavatam entitled Lord Parsaram Destroys the Ruling Class. We heard yesterday about Parsaram's activities, how the Kamadhenu cow of his father Jamadagni had been stolen by Kartavirya Arjun, who was envious that he, his father, or rather Parsaram's father, the great sage, possessed something that he did not have, even though he was so practically unlimitedly powerful. He wanted that one thing, that Kamadhenu cow. So Parsaram retaliated and killed Kartavirya Arjuna for this, as well as so many of the army men who were sent by Kartavirya Arjuna to stop Parsaram. But Parsaram was Shakta Veshavatari. The energy of the Lord was within him. He was God in that sense. He was an incarnation of the Lord. And he was so powerful that his axis, chapa, was moving at the speed of the mind and killing one soldier, one infantryman, one cavalryman, one after another. But then, when he returned with the Kamadhenu to his father, with that cow to his father said, "You have, look what you have done. For a minor offense, someone stealing this cow, you have acted in such an extreme way, such a heavy way. You have to purify yourself from this sin and you should go on pilgrimage for 1 year. You have to forgive. This is the glorious brahminical quality, that of forgiveness. There is a great irony in that." His father's preaching, and we shall hear that irony right now. So that was to the end of chapter 15. Parsaram had gone on pilgrimage. And then Sukadeva Goswami, this is the first verse of chapter 16. "My dear Maharaj Prickett, son of the Kuru dynasty," because Sukadeva Goswami was speaking to Maharaj Prickett, who was very soon to leave this world. Perhaps only 2 days, 3 days remained before the curse would overtake him. "So my dear Maharaj Prickett," Sukadev Goswami said, "son of the Kuru dynasty, when Lord Parsaram was given this order by his father, he immediately agreed, saying, 'Let it be so.' For one complete year he traveled to holy places. Then he returned to his father's residence." Now his mother, Parsaram's mother, was named Renuka. So once when Renuka, the wife of Jamadagni, went to the bank of the Ganges to get water, she saw the king of the Gandharvas decorated with a garland of lotuses and sporting in the Ganges with celestial women, apsaras. He was enjoying. She had gone to bring water from the Ganges, but when she saw Chitrarata, that was the name of the king of the Gandharvas, sporting with the celestial girls, she was somewhat inclined towards him and failed to remember that the time for the fire sacrifice was passing. So she became attracted to the strong and handsome Gandharva king Chitrarata that was sporting in the water with the ladies, the apsara ladies, beautiful ladies. Her mind became inclined in that direction. And because she was distracted, she had come to get the water for the sacrifice, for a husband, but she became late. The time when it was required had finished, practically speaking, and she arrived there late. So later, understanding that the time for offering the sacrifice had passed, Renuka feared a curse from her husband, because her husband was very, very powerful. We have seen how powerful he was, very, very powerful. So she was afraid that she had done something wrong and he would curse her. Therefore, when she returned, she simply put the water pot before him and stood there with folded hands. The great sage Jamadagni understood that the adultery in the mind of his wife, that her mind had become inclined towards another man. Therefore, he was very angry and told his sons, "My dear sons, kill this sinful woman." Now, it's interesting to keep in mind that he had just very strongly preached to Parsaram about forgiveness over especially minor offenses. And yet he became very angry because, as those of us who preach know, it is much easier to preach than to practice what you preach. It's also, oh, we're back to that one. No, that was yesterday. We've moved onward. Now it's preach to be, or preach to yourself, or practice. So he wasn't in a forgiving mood, actually. He told his sons, his own sons, what an amazing request. Not even a request, an order. Kill the sinful woman. But the sons did not carry out his order. Then, or Janmadagni then ordered his youngest son, Parsaram, to kill his brothers because they didn't carry out his order. Who disobeyed this order? And his mother, who had mentally committed adultery. Lord Parsaram, knowing the power of his father, who is practiced in meditation and austerity, killed his mother and his brothers immediately. So he was very obedient. But he knew something. He knew something of the nature and the power of his father, Janmadagni. So Janmadagni, the son of Satyavati, was very much pleased with Parsaram and asked him to take any benediction he liked. "You have pleased me so much. Whatever you like, I will give you." And Lord Parsaram replied, "Let my mother and brothers live again and not remember having been killed by me. This is the benediction that I asked." So what did Janmadagni do? Immediately, by the benediction of Janmadagni, Lord Parsaram's mother and brothers immediately came alive and were very happy, as if awakened from sound sleep. Lord Parsaram had killed his relatives in accordance with his father's order, because he was fully aware of his father's power, austerity, and learning. And Prabhupada paraphrases these last few verses up to 8 in his purported text 6. We'll read that short purport. The word prabhava gya is significant. Prabhav means power, potency, and gya means knowing. So he knew the potency of his father. Parsaram knew the prowess of his father, and therefore he agreed to carry out his father's order. He thought that if he refused to carry out the order, he would be cursed. But if he carried it out, his father would be pleased, and with his father pleased, Parsaram would ask the benediction of having his mother and brothers brought back to life. Parsaram was confident in this regard, and therefore he agreed to kill his mother and brothers. Amazing pastimes that we're reading. And the last ones were also quite amazing. That Nimi Maharaj and Vasishta Muni cursing each other. And then prior to that, Pururava and Urvashi. And now Parsaram, part 2. Text 11. So everything was very happy. Yes? No. Because there was someone else, some others who also hadn't learned the art of forgiveness, and that was the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna, who had run from the battle terrified after they saw that their incredibly powerful father had been killed by Parsaram, and they decided that they would take revenge. So once, when Parsaram left the ashram for the forest with Vasuman and his other brothers, the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna took the opportunity to approach Janmadagni's residence to seek vengeance for their grudge. The sons of Kartavirya Arjuna were determined to commit sinful deeds. Therefore, when they saw Janmadagni sitting by the side of the fire to perform jagya and meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavati Uttamasloke, Avishesha Diyam. Avishesha means completely absorbed, Diyam, by his intelligence in meditation on Bhagavat, on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Uttamasloke, who is praised by chosen verses, selected prayers. So he was fully enwrapped in meditation. And when they saw him, the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna saw him in that way, they took the opportunity to kill him. Now, on one hand, this was a terrible, sinful thing to do. On the other hand, what was his the result of him being killed? There'll be another result that we'll hear about later. But at this point, we should know yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tadyan yante kalevaram tam tam ibhakti kanteya saratad bhava bharata. Saratad bhava bharata. Whatever one's consciousness, and this is always the fact, is absorbed in, at the time when he is leaving his body, tyajan yante kalevaram, he will attain that particular thing that his consciousness is absorbed in. Avishtayam manastayam visya upasevate. The soul is within the subtle body. And when the gross body, the physical body, dies, the subtle body, or sometimes called the astral body, does not die. But that body, that subtle body, composed of the mind, especially the citta, it is filled with the desires that the living entity has accumulated in his life. So when we think about some of our desires, that's a very frightening thought. And those desires actually dictate one's next birth. Or if we have exalted desires, that is an exalted thought. Or if we have mixed, it depends. But his consciousness, Janmadagni's consciousness, was by his full intelligence, not superficially thinking about Krishna, but absorbed. He was fully absorbed. And if one dies somehow or another in unfortunate circumstances or this or that, when one's consciousness is absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in that sense there is no greater fortune, because one leaves this material world forever. And that, amazingly enough, is what Parikshit Maharaj himself is trying to do. He had asked Sukadev Goswami and all the sages, what is the duty of a man about to die? And the conclusion that Sukadev told him was that your duty is to always focus your mind, hearing and chanting on the Supreme Lord, to become absorbed in him. Just as Janmadagni actually was. But that is somewhat tangential to the pastime, but it is still amazing. This is the great benefit of being always absorbed in Krishna consciousness. That great benefit is no harm can actually come to one on the true level. And even if one meets the most unfortunate of circumstances, and this certainly is the most unfortunate of circumstances, it is turned by Krishna's mercy into the greatest fortune. So therefore, the conclusion is we should become absorbed in thinking about Krishna. This is actually the limit of the teachings of all religious paths, that one should become absorbed, but it should be anukulena Krishna nasilanam, very favorably and ultimately with love. Become absorbed, seeing Krishna in everything. This is what Lord Brahma was told by Krishna in the third of the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam verses that have the four verses that have the essential Bhagavatam. He said that always, that you should learn through love to see me in everything and everywhere. And then later on, the same thing in the third canto is explained to Brahma again by the Lord. You should become absorbed in me, see me like fire permeates wood. There is always fire in wood. You can't see it, perhaps, but it's there. So similarly, Krishna is in everything. And to see him in everything is perfect consciousness. This is prayojan. The necessity of life, the conclusion, the goal. So anyway, Kartavirya Arjuna, his sons, got their revenge. With the sons, all Jamnadagni's sons, including Parasaram, were not present, otherwise they couldn't do that. But Ranuka, the wife of Jamnadagni, was present. And with pitiable prayers, Renuka, the mother of Parasaram and the wife of Janmadagni, begged for the life of her husband. But the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna, being devoid of the qualities of Kshatriyas, being devoid of mercy, compassion, because when one has power, if it's not balanced with mercifulness and compassion, it will cause harm. This is one of the balancing agents. And especially a Kshatriya warrior must have the nature that if someone begs him for shelter, they have to give that person shelter, in the same way that if someone begs him to fight, I challenge you to fight, he has to accept that fight. So he also has to accept the shelter of someone who surrenders to him, even his enemy. So Renuka begged for the life of her husband, but the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna, being devoid of the qualities of Kshatriyas, were so cruel that despite her prayers, they forcibly cut off his head and took it away. They were so vengeful. Lamenting in grief for the death of her husband, the most chaste Renuka, she's most chaste, struck her own body with her hands and cried very loudly, "O Ram, my dear son Ram!" And although the sons of Janmadagni, including Lord Parasaram, were a long distance from home, as soon as they heard Renuka loudly calling, "O Ram, O my son," they hastily returned to the ashram where they saw their father already killed. Virtually bewildered by grief, anger, indignation, affliction, and lamentation, the sons of Jamadagni cried, "O Father, most religious, saintly person, you have left us and gone to the heavenly planets." They knew he was bound for a wonderful result in dying, because he was so powerful, pure, and pious. But they themselves were feeling the loss. Thus lamenting, Lord Parasaram entrusted his dead body, his father's dead body, to his brothers. "You take care of this." And he personally took up his axe, having decided to put an end to all the Kshatriyas on the surface of the world, because he did not like their mentality. This is on one level. This is on the eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth level. But there is, when Krishna does something, It is never on that human level. It is never that I killed your father and therefore you killed my father and now I'm going to kill you. Revenge, revenge, sweet revenge. No, it's not like that. That is not what it is in Parsaram's heart. Prabhupada will explain this in a few moments. O King, Maharaj Prickett speaking to Sukadev, Lord Parsaram then went to Mahishmati, which was the capital city of Kartavirya Arjuna, where all the sons lived, which was already doomed by the sinful killing of a brahmana, because they had killed this sinless brahmana Janmadagni, who had done them no harm. They had killed such an exalted person, and the reaction for that is such doom, destruction, for such sinful acts. We enjoy by our piety, and when we commit sins, then we have to suffer, and the pious results that one enjoys are finished. This is such a difference between that the way that the members of the Vedic culture think, and the way that the Western mentality thinks. Because Westerners think, I enjoy by my power, by my potency, by my desire, by my strength, by my endeavor. But in the Vedic culture, they understood that by blessings and by purity and piety, even on the material level, that's how one enjoyed. So when Bali Maharaj took over the kingship of the heaven, he understood that on one level he wasn't qualified to be to rule the heavenly planets. So he performed under the auspices of Sukracharya so many sacrifices to increase his piety and thereby maintain his position, because without piety, without piety or having done good deeds, one suffers. So we tend to, of course, to blame our suffering on others, but actually it is our own, it is sinful reactions coming to us. And our enjoyment, we tend to not blame on others, we tend to blame that on, or rather give ourselves the credit due to my powers and intelligence or whatever I'm enjoying, but actually that's the result of piety, previously performed material piety. So Parsaram went to that doomed place with his axe, Mahishmati. And in the midst of that city, he made a mountain of heads severed from the bodies of the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna. With the blood of the bodies of these sons, Lord Parsaram created a ghastly river which brought great fear to the kings who had no respect for Brahminical culture. Because the Kshatriyas, the men of power and government, were performing sinful activities, Lord Parsaram, on the plea of retaliating for the murder of his father, rid all the Kshatriyas from the face of the earth 21 times. Indeed, in the place known as Samanta Panchaka, he created 9 lakes filled with their blood. Has anyone ever seen those lakes? They're not red at this time. In Kurukshetra. You've been to Kurukshetra? Yes, that is the big, big tank. Is that the big, 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 very big lake that's there? Is that Samanta Panchaka? You've been? You've seen Kurukshetra? One time only. Okay. So Parsaram, Prabhupada's purport, there was a very important point that Sukadev mentioned, that on the plea of retaliation, seemingly superficially, but there was another whole purpose to what he did. There's always another purpose. There is no one deeper and more intelligent, more genius than Krishna, than God, and he accomplishes many things with one deed. Purport. Parsaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his eternal mission is Pariktranaya Sadunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam, to protect the devotees and to annihilate the miscreants. To kill all the sinful men is one among the tasks of the incarnation of God. Lord Parasuram killed all the Kshatriyas 21 times consecutively because they were disobedient to the Brahminical culture. That the Kshatriyas had killed his father was only a plea. This was the superficial excuse. The real fact is that because the Kshatriyas, the ruling class, had become polluted, their position was inauspicious. Because when the rulers become bad, what is the result? They mislead the citizens. They exploit the citizens. And so many people commit sinful activities and suffer. Their opportunity for human life is finished. And what keeps the Kshatriyas good is their obedience to the Brahminical culture, because that keeps a perspective on their life. Because they rule, they deal with power, they deal with money, they deal with that type of energy which is basically in the mode of passion. There is such a tendency for them to become in illusion and proud. So therefore the counterbalancing factor in the Vedic culture was that the Brahminical culture was there. The topmost persons were not the ones who had the material power, but the topmost persons in society whom everyone listened to, even though the powerful administrators, the kings, was the Brahminical class, the spiritual intellectuals, who did not value the material world for its own sake, but saw the value of the material world as a platform to attain the spiritual world. So they possessed little in the material world, so that they could, like Janmadagni, meditate on the spiritual world. Their mind was focused there, and therefore, when they kept the Kshatriyas in line, that was the culture. And it was voluntary. The culture set up norms that the Kshatriyas naturally knew that they had to make sure that they governed according to the Brahminical principle. So they came to the Brahmins for advice, for counsel. They would not go against their counsel. They were also afraid of the Brahminical power. So the Kshatriyas had become rotten, and therefore Parasuram, under the plea of the retaliation, killed them. He rid the earth of the Kshatriyas. Prabhupada continues. Brahminical culture is enjoined in the Shastra, especially in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvanam Maya Srishtam Gunakarma Vibhagasa. According to the laws of nature, whether at the time of Parasuram or at the present, if the government becomes irresponsible and sinful, not caring for Brahminical culture, in other words, if they don't have a spiritual direction, if they don't have a spiritual direction that they're leading the citizens, if they misunderstand what the purpose of life is, then they are acting irresponsibly, they will act sinfully, and not caring for Brahminical culture, there will certainly be an incarnation of God like Parasuram to create a devastation by fire, famine, pestilence, or some other calamity. So Krishna comes in the form of some calamity when there is too much sinful activity. Calamities must occur. Wars must occur. Horrible pestilence, diseases must occur due to the sinful activities of the rulers and the citizens. Whenever the government disrespects the supremacy of the personality of Godhead and fails to protect the institution of Vanashrama Dharma, it will certainly have to face such catastrophes as formerly brought about by Lord Parasuram. 20. So he made a big mountain of heads. Thereafter, Parasuram joined his father's head to the dead body and placed the whole body and head upon kusha grass. By offering sacrifices, he began to worship Lord Vasudeva, who was the all-pervading supersoul of all the demigods and of every living entity. And after completing the sacrifice, Lord Parasuram gave the eastern direction to the Hota. These are the different priests of the sacrifice, as a gift the south to the Brahma, the head priest, the west to the Arvayu, the north to the Udgata, and the four corners, northeast, southeast, northwest, and southwest, to the other priest. He gave the middle to Kasyapa, and the place known as Aryavarta to the Upadrashta. Upadrashta means what? From the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. Upa means near, and drashta means seer. Upadrashta no mantacha bhakta bhakta maheshra. The near seer, he is very near, and he sees everything. Everything! Whatever remained, he distributed amongst the sadhyasas, the associate priests. Thereafter, having completed the ritualistic sacrificial ceremonies, Lord Parsaram took the bath known as the Avabrita Snan, which means after the sacrifice is completed, and standing on the bank of the great river Saraswati. It's interesting to note that he joined his father's head to the dead body, because he had brought that back. They had took the head with him. So ghastly. And then Lord Parsaram took his bath, standing on the bank of the great river Saraswati, cleared of all sins. Lord Parsaram appeared like the sun in a clear, cloudless sky. We'll read from some of Prabhupada's purport, the second two-thirds. Although Lord Parsaram was an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he had to account for sinful activities. Anyone in this material world, however careful he may be, must commit some sinful activities, even though he doesn't want to. For example, one may trample many small ants and other insects while walking on the street and kill many living beings unknowingly. Therefore, the Vedic principle of Panchajagya, five kinds of recommended sacrifice, is compulsory to remove these type of sins. From when we drink water, there's killing living entities, the breathing, the stepping like that, cooking. So these are all sins. The natural tendency in the material world, the unavoidable natural tendency, is to do to act improperly, and therefore become entangled and go downward. Therefore, the Vedic principle of Panchajagya, five kinds of recommended sacrifice, is compulsory. In this age of Kali, however, there is a great concession given to people in general. Yajyai sankirtana prayar yajantihi sumedasa. We may worship Lord Chaitanya, the hidden incarnation of Krishna. Krishna vanam tuisha Krishna. Although he is Krishna himself, he always chants Hare Krishna and preaches Krishna consciousness. One is recommended to worship this incarnation by chanting the Sankirtan Jagya. The performance of Sankirtan Jagya is a special concession for human society to save people from being afflicted by known or unknown sinful activities. We are surrounded by unlimited sins, and therefore it is compulsory that one take to Krishna consciousness and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Compulsory? In what sense is it compulsory? Because there are so many people, you tell that it's compulsory to chant Hare Krishna, they'll just laugh. I don't want to chant Hare Krishna. But what Prabhupada means by compulsory means that it is required if one wants to relieve himself from the sins that he commits. There is an if in there. If one wishes to become free from sins, then it is compulsory to chant Hare Krishna. Kalo nasteva 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 gatyanyata. And how much should we chant? It's best, it is perfect if we continuously chant. Mare Krishna Rakike. No, for one who chants Hare Krishna, if one has problems and chants Hare Krishna, there may be some verse that explains this, that problem will go away. And if one doesn't have any problems and always chants Hare Krishna, then he will never have problems. But possibly on the material level, the karma comes and goes. But one is not the body, one is eternal, one is his soul. One will become uplifted from identifying with everything that happens on the bodily or mental level if one always chants Hare Krishna. Thus Janmadagni, being worshipped by Lord Parsaram, was brought back to life by performance of that jagya with full remembrance, and he became one of the seven sages in the group of seven stars, one of the Saptarishis. My dear King Prickett, in the next Manvantar, the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, Lord Parsaram, the son of Janmadagni, will be a great propounder of Vedic knowledge. In other words, he will become one of the seven sages. In Prabhupada's introduction to this chapter, he says that in the next Manvantar he will become a preacher of Vedic knowledge. So that is the result of what happens to Parsaram. Now there is another pastime in the remainder of this chapter, another thing to be explained. The verses go on. Now if we remember, 2 days ago we heard that Richika Muni married Satyavati, the daughter of a the daughter of a king, and he was a Brahmin, or a sage. And there was a mix-up. Satyavati's mother, the wife of the queen, was to give birth to a Brahmin, and she was to give birth to a fierce warrior who was transferred to her grandson, and that was Janmadagni. Grandson was Parsaram, and her son was a Brahmin. But there is this, the Brahmin son of the king. What was the king's name? Anyone remember? I don't remember. We could see. And his name was Vishwamrita. Now we have to hear about Vishwamrita. Vishwamrita, the son of Maharaj Gadi, that was the king's name, was as powerful as the flames of fire. From the position of a Kshatri, he achieved the position of a powerful Brahmin by undergoing penances and austerities. Prabhupada's purport. Now, having narrated the history of Lord Parsaram, Sukadev Goswami begins the history of Vishwamrita. From the history of Parsaram, we can understand that although Parsaram belonged to the Brahminical group, he circumstantially had to work as a Kshatriya. Later, after finishing his work as a Kshatriya, he again became a Brahmin and returned to Mahendra Parvat. Similarly, we can see that O Vishwamrita was born in a Kshatriya family. By austerities and penances, he achieved the position of a Brahmana. These histories confirm the statements in Shastra that a Brahmin may become a Kshatriya may become a Brahmin, or Vaishya, and a Vaishya may become a Brahmin by achieving the required qualities. One's status does not depend on birth, as confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Narada Muni, Yasya lal lakshanam proktam pumso vana bivan yajakam yad anyatrap. If one shows the symptoms of being a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra, even if he has appeared in a different class, he should be accepted according to those symptoms of classification. So it's not Brahmin by birth, it's by quality. It's not Kshatriya by birth, it's by quality. It's by quality. So it is not a caste system, so to speak. It is not caste in metal. Hardened. It is fluid. It is by quality, not by birth. To know who is a Brahmana and who is a Kshatriya, one must consider a man's quality and work. If all the unqualified Sudras become so-called Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, social order will be impossible to maintain. Or if they act as if they were, the unqualified persons, if they act as if they were Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Because Prabhupada has just explained the importance of the Brahminical the Brahmins leading the society, making sure that culture has a proper perspective. Because now, what is the perspective of society? That the purpose of life is to gain wealth. The purpose of society is to become economically prosperous. And if we become economically prosperous, all our problems will be solved. If we have enough jobs for everyone and big corporations coming in, creating jobs, then all our problems will be solved. Big multinationals, but it doesn't work like that also. Actually, poverty. Poverty is created on every level. On the material level, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. On the spiritual level, when this is the all that is, economics become the goal, then there is poverty on the spiritual level. Socially there is poverty. Emotionally there is poverty. Everyone is exploited on every level. So therefore, to keep society in the proper perspective, the Brahminical culture, those who will say there is a spiritual purpose to life, this is required. And if someone who doesn't have that vision, who doesn't have the qualities, the Brahminical qualities, that vision, takes up the position of Brahmins, and the Sudra and the Kshatriyas don't have the quality of Kshatriyas. They don't know how to protect. They don't know how to listen to, be submissive to the Brahmins, and society becomes warped. And that is basically what's happened today. So this principle is important, that anyone who has the qualities, the spiritual qualities, should be considered a Brahmin. So to know who is a Brahmin and who is a Kshatriya, one must consider a man's qualities and work. If all the unqualified Sudras become so-called Brahmins and Kshatriyas, social order will be impossible to maintain. Thus there will be discrepancies. Human society will turn into a society of animals. And the situation all over the world will be hellish. Sound familiar? O King Prickett, Sukadeva Goswami describes, Vishamrita had 101 sons, of whom the middle one was known as Madhuchanda. In relation to him, all the other sons were celebrated as the Madhuchandas. 50 were older, 50 were younger. Vishamrita accepted the son of Ajigarta, known as Sunasefa, who was born in the Bhrigu dynasty, and was also known as Devarata, as one of his own sons. So he took someone outside of the family and accepted him as his son. Vishwamitra ordered his other sons to accept Sunasefa as their eldest brother. Now in the Vedic culture, and even in so many other cultures years ago, but in the Vedic culture, even today, you can find that the oldest brother is accepted as an authority, and the younger brothers will listen to him, because in this world, who accepts any, in the Western society, no one accepts anyone else's authority, and everyone is just, because that limits their choices, their chances, their ability to enjoy. And has that made people happy, to have unlimited choices and chances? It's made everyone very confused. In the Vedic culture, there were less choices in that sense. And in the old cultures, it's the same. People were quite obedient. So when the Western culture looks at that, they consider that overbearing and primitive. But the people are happy, because they're not always thinking, oh, should I do this? Should I do that? Should I do this? Should I do this? And if I do that, then I could do that and that and that. Maybe if I do that, it expands into 17 other choices, and I can always do that and 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 that. And everyone's head is completely spinning around. Neurotic, psychotic, schizophrenic. So many choices, very unnatural. Even something as simple, the sense gratification of watching television, when people aren't satisfied with two channels or four channels or seven channels. They need hundreds of channels, as if that's going to satisfy them. And a big on their roof. If thousands, millions of channels, is that going to make anyone more choices? More, I could be watching 15,000 television shows at the same time. My freedom.
Screens that are split as well, you can actually watch
15 different things, and then you become so confused. Who am I? Which screen am I identifying with at the moment? So crazy. This is contemporary, and Prabhupada would always say, so-called culture. So-called civilization. It's insane, actually. Because there is no authority. No authority. And everyone has unlimited choices, and the result is simply unlimited confusion. Vishwamitra, the powerful Brahmin, born in the Kshatriya family, he told his sons to accept this Devarata, who was from a different family in the dynasty of Bhrigu Muni, as their eldest brother. That means that he would be the authority. He ordered them. Sunasefa's father, this is a story that's from the Mahabharata or the Puranas. This is the famous story of Harishchandra. It's not explained here, but it's in very much detail, but it's explained in other places. Sunasefa's father sold Sunasefa to be sacrificed as a man animal in the Jagya of King Harishchandra. There was a sacrifice where a man was going to be sacrificed. And Harishchandra, he was brought into the sacrificial arena. Instead of his son being sacrificed, he bought someone to be sacrificed in his place, this Sunasefa. But when he was in the arena being ready to be killed for the sacrifice, he prayed to the demigods and was released by their mercy. Although Sunasefa was born in the Bhargava dynasty, he was greatly advanced in spiritual life. And therefore the demigods involved in the sacrifice protected him. Consequently, he was also celebrated as the descendant of Gadi, named Devarata. So he was given another name. Devarata means, I believe, protected by the demigods. When requested by their father to accept Sunasefa as the eldest son, the elder 50 of the Madhuchandas, the sons of Vishwamitra, did not agree. Therefore Vishwamitra, being angry, cursed them. May all of you bad sons become malicious, being opposed to the principles of Vedic culture. When the elder Madhuchandis were cursed, the younger 50, along with Madhuchand himself, approached their father and agreed to accept his proposal. Dear father, they said, we shall abide by whatever arrangements you like. Thus the younger Madhuchandis accepted Sunasefa as their eldest brother and told him, we shall follow your orders. Vishwamitra then said to his obedient sons, because you have accepted Sunasefa as your eldest brother, I am very satisfied. By accepting my order, you have made me a father of worthy sons. And therefore I bless all of you to become the fathers of sons also. Purport. Of the 100 sons, half disobeyed Vishwamitra by not accepting Sunasefa as their eldest brother, but the other half accepted his order. Therefore the father blessed the obedient sons to become the fathers of sons. Otherwise they too would have been cursed to be sonless mlechas. Vishwamitra said, O Kosikas, the descendants of Kosika, this Devarata is my son and is one of you. Please obey his orders. O King Prickett, Vishwamitra had many other sons, such as Astaka, Harita, Jaya, and Kratuman. Vishwamitra cursed some of his sons and blessed the others, and he also adopted a son. Thus there were varieties in the Kosika dynasty, but among all the sons, Devarata was considered the eldest. So that's a quite another unique story. Okay, we'll stop here. And the unique stories of the ninth canto have not ended. There are more to come. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Shri Prabhupada. Jai Shri Mahabhagavatam. Any questions, comments? Yes.
What does that mean, crash around the chapters 21 times?
He didn't kill the same ones 21 times. It seems, and nor did they come back to life, and kill them. It seems that it means that he went out on different excursions and took him 21 times to rid that area or the world of Kshatriyas. Prabhupada explains in the first canto, quoting the Mahabharata, that some of the Kshatriyas, fearing Parsaram, ran from this part of India and went to Greece and the other areas, Western countries. So Prabhupada said the Westerners are also Aryans in that sense, Aryans. They're part of the Vedic culture because their culture stems from the escaping Kshatriyas. So after going on these killing excursions, 21 of them, he rid the whole area of Bharatvarsha of Kshatriyas. That's what it appears. Any other? Yes, William.
Quite a
few questions.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is probably due to my being a new religion, this very culture. One is number one is why is this Renuka still considered chess after she was revived? When her husband was killed, Tamalakni was killed.
She was so loyal to him, actually. She was fully loyal to him. She was still fully loyal to him. A wife is her beauty is explained is her loyalty to her to her husband.
She was just killed by her son on the order of her father.
Yes, but still she was completely loyal to him, and therefore she was chaste. If someone has a son, for example, and the father has a son, and the father treats the son somewhat improperly, or the son perceives it in that way, that he sticks to the father makes him a very loyal son.
I have one suggestion. Is it because maybe this is a liver and also is it maybe because the king of the Gandhavas?
Oh, you're talking about it from that point of view. Yeah. So you mean she had a fault in her consciousness? You're saying that she had a fault in her consciousness, and therefore why is she considered chaste? She had a fault of chastity, and why is she considered so chaste?
Yes. In fact,
was the question?
Jamal Dhani, in fact, considered her adulteress.
Yes. But in one of the purports, it is explained, and it's clear that fault was minor. In Kali Yuga, even, one doesn't get karma for the activities, the improper activities one commits in one's mind. Even.
In which case it was a minor
thing, and there was a major reaction for that.
Exactly. Is that it was minor than the Jamaluddin name overreacted?
But as you're saying, it's also Leela, because when Krishna is involved,
yes.
Parsaram is involved.
Yes.
So we understand that everything is ultimately Leela.
That's right. because it involved the king of the Kandavas, and also actually there was no probably no physical.
No, there was just something came into her mind. So, and also she was repentant after.
Yeah.
She came to him like this, I've done something wrong. With hands folded.
Also, okay. The second thing is about this one, Prabhu. This, this Jalad Agni, supposed to be so powerful. How could he be killed by the son of this Kavirara Arjuna so easily?
Well, one answer is also the one you said of Leela, but he was absorbed in trance, so therefore there was no defense. And also, it's hard to tell how a great sage will act. Sometimes maybe they'll just okay, whatever Krishna wants, like Pariket Maharaj when he was cursed to die. He could have retaliated. Protected himself either by some mantras or prayers or a counter curse, but he said, okay, if this is what Krishna wants, okay. There's a story of a famous very very spiritual healer. People from all over the world would come to him, very religious man, and he would pray to them. They would come to him with they would be diseased, and he would pray to God, and their diseases would be cured. But he himself had many diseases. So the natural question that one would ask is what? That if he had the power to cure diseases, why didn't the physician heal himself? So someone said, asked him, why don't you cure yourself? You suffer so much. And his reply was, this is not for me. In other words, I don't need it. I'm ready to accept whatever Krishna gives me as his blessing, his grace, his mercy, the touch of his hand. I may like it, I may not like it, but this is due to my own karma. So let me accept my karma and just accept it, the suffering. So the healing part, that's for others. So I'll heal others. And that will increase their faith, but my faith is already strong. I don't need it. So it's hard to tell how a sage would react if someone's going to kill him. All right, good. Like Socrates. Where should we bury you? They asked him. And he said, first you have to find me. I'm a soul, I'm eternal. Their realization is very deep.
The question is, why is just Jabardhani why is this considered as a Brahman-nipu?
A what?
Brahman-nipu. Because he's considered as a great Brahmin after he has beheaded his wife.
Well, one answer again is pastimes. And another, but there's other answers too, that when great powerful persons do something, it is not for us to judge them. So, because what we do is we take our consciousness and we impose our consciousness and think he must have been doing like this. If I were to do something like that, I'd be really so furiously angry and degraded to do something like that. So therefore he must be like that. But his consciousness is different.
I understand. If
you
see he's on a very standpoint of view, it's different. But if you were to see it from a mundane, secular standpoint of view.
Why should we see it from a mundane point of view? Do we want to be mundane?
That's why I mean, of course, that's why I asked the question, because from first reading the piece.
But just like Parsaram, why only Janmadagni? We heard how Parsaram, superficially, he killed all the Kshatriyas and all the sons, all the army to, as retaliation, as revenge. But that actually wasn't what was going on. It appeared that way superficially, but actually this was his mission, to remove the burden of the earth. This is the mission of incarnations of God. Yeah, you want to? Yes.
There's something to what we were saying about seeing it on a mundane level.
Yes.
Because all of these pastimes are also giving some instruction on the mundane level. People who are on the mundane level, how they should behave and how they shouldn't behave. So, as far as I remember, on one side, there's an instruction given to the wifely level of the mundane, level of how they should behave. But is it not in the report somewhere that John Dugney had his head removed?
Yes, actually, I didn't read that. Yes, that's.
Yes,
I'm sorry. Actually, I meant to read that and somehow it didn't get read. There was a purport.
There's something for the instruction of the wife and there's something for the instruction of the husband.
Let me see if I can find that. I did mean to read that. Here it is. This is Sukadeva Goswami. Thank you. Speaking to Maharaj Prickett. My dear Maharaj Prickett, the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna, who were defeated by the superior strength of Parsaram, never achieved happiness, for they always remembered the killing of their father. Purport. Janmadagni was certainly very powerful due to his austerities, but because of a slight offense by his poor wife, Renuka, he ordered that she be killed. This certainly was a sinful act, and therefore Janmadagni was killed by the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna, as described herein. Lord Parsaram was also infected by sin because of killing Kartavirya Arjuna, although this was not very offensive. Therefore, whether one be Kartavirya Arjuna, Lord Parsaram, Janmadagni, or whoever one may be, one must act very cautiously and sagaciously. Otherwise, one must suffer the results of sinful activities. This is the lesson we receive from Vedic literature. So, yes. Thank you. Does that answer that part of your question, too?
Yes. Yeah, what does it do?
So, you see things on different levels.
It's meant to be lesson. Even they, great souls, so have saved the mystic.
A warning given. If you intend that you can become a great soul, then you won't have to pay for the
protection.
Everybody should act very
carefully. Huh? What does he say?
Why would not to follow? And there would be chaos.
Because people would follow the example. Another reason. Okay, we'll stop here. And if Krishna allows, next Wednesday we shall continue. The ninth canto goes onward. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.